Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is a show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book. I do a review, stick it up here on the podcast feed, and today is an extra special extra special episode. One of the main reasons it's extra special is because my girlfriend is with me. She is taking part in this episode. Say hello to everyone, Juliana.
Hello, everyone.
And the reason why I brought Juliana on this one is because I was having a bit of trouble with this series that we're going to be talking about today, which is the Vorkosigan series by Lewis McMaster Bujold. And one of the things that I was kind of getting a bit stuck with, that this is quite a long series. There's like 15 different books, actually. Let me just... We made sure we had all the pages open. So here on Audible, it says there's 16 different Audible books, plus there's other short stories, plus there's a very confusing number of different omnibuses and collections of novellas, and some books are combined into one book as well. And Juliana, you're looking through this the German versions, which they've all been... Most of the novels, it seems like they've been translated, but they're all collected in different ways than the English books.
Yeah, yeah. But some of them have... They and on the Wikipedia page, they show that there are omnibuses,
yeah, collections,
but only in English and not in German. And then several omnibuses, like, they have books which are combined, but then it's difficult to read the correct order and, like, these kind of problems.
Anyway, because this is such a long series, the problem that you're going to have with any kind of series is, well, how do you... I've done this a few times now, but it's like with different series that we reviewed, it's like, how do I review this book, but I don't want to give away too much of what is in it, because if you've not read up until this point, none of the story points and none of the characters that I mentioned are going to make sense to you. You're not going to know what. So I'll just be like recapping the series so far. But then, like, if you've not read up this point, but maybe you read past that point. Anyway, the whole thing is a bit strange. And people said, well, you should really just go in full spoilers with your reviews if you're doing a series review. So the way this is working is that we're going to do this this series as a kind of like a read-along, reading group kind of thing. And so I said to Juliana, hey, I've read listened to the audiobooks of a few of these. There's Falling Free, which was written a lot later than the first book. And then there's Shards of Honor, and then there's Barrier, and then there's The Warrior's Apprentice. I've read the first three of these. I said, what you should do is start at Shards of Honor, because that kind of introduces the main family that we seem to be following in this series. And read that one, and then read Barrier. And there was actually, we went along to a second-hand science fiction book, which is just around the corner, which had the omnibus of both of those books together. So Shards of Honor and Barrier collected together into an omnibus called...
Cordelia's Honor.
Well, no, it's called Barrier on the front of the German thing, a subtitle of Cordelia's Honor. So it's a bit strange, but we worked out which it is. And then I got the audiobook of The Warrior's Apprentice, which is the first book which features Miles Vorkosigan in the first is like the viewpoint character, the protagonist. In German, that is called The Cadet.
Der Cadet.
Der Cadet, as in the German word for
the cadet.
Which is strange, because when you think about it, mild spoilers at this point, anyway, so that's one thing that was... I need to turn this mic input down, otherwise it's gonna... So instead of us trying to review this book, talking about characters that we've already talked about, we'll just go through these books. If we read further on in these series, we'll just read them at the same time. And the idea being is that you listeners, fellow listeners at home, either you know this series and you already know the later books and you don't mind the spoilers of what's happened beforehand. So even if you've not read all of the previous books, you already kind of know what's happening. Because this, I think the series is meant to be written, or the plan is that you can pick it up at any point and the books make sense, which is one way of looking at it. Or if you don't care about spoilers, you can read along. But the idea is, like, you can either read along or enjoy our journey through these books if you've read them before or whatever. So on that note, we're going to talk about these books as though you've read them. We're going to try not to spoil what happened in the Cordelia's Honor, in the Shards of Honor and Barrier books, and the Falling Free, so you can still read them and know what's going on. But if you've read The Warrior's Apprentice, you'll already know a lot of the characters and a lot of the things that's gone in there as well. So from this point on, spoilers. But if you don't want to if you don't want to be spoiled and you're going to stop listening now, recommendation, should people read this series?
Yeah, give it a go. Like we did, and then I don't know yet if it's worth continuing, but
we'll have to see.
So good.
So far, so good. Worth reading. So it's a recommendation. And spoiler for this review that we're going to do now for the end of it. Certainly, Cordelia's on it and Barry are. Both Juliana and I liked that a lot more than The Warrior's Apprentice. But so certainly read those two books. Hopefully, the second book with Miles Vorkosigan as the main character, it picks up again. Hopefully it picks up again. Anyway, so let's get into this review. Let's go back and tell, because I've already done three podcasts on this series already, talking about Cordelia's Honor, no, Shards of Honor and Barrier.
Oh, okay.
So tell us a little bit about what you thought of those two novels. You already know because I've talked to you about this as well, even if you don't listen to my podcast, you know my opinions on these books. The reason why Juliana doesn't listen to my podcast is because I always talk to her about the book I'm reading anyway, so it would just be like the same conversations that we have. She has to listen to it all again, so that's no good. So, what do you think?
Cordelia's Honor, which is Shards of Honor, and Barrier. I started reading it, and
Just talk in this direction, not away.
Okay. I really liked it. It was really good. I really enjoyed it, and it was really good fun. And like, loads of the pacing was really good in the books. And the first one, of course, is way more adventurous.
Yeah, we're just going to presume people have read this far in the series. They only have to read these three novels to keep up. I mean, people always say, hey, you should do full spoiler reviews early of a series, and that's what we're doing. Just presume people know what happens in these books.
So in the first one, they have loads of these adventures, and when Lot Vorkosigan and Cordelia meet, they're totally different. They're like... Oh, well, she's from Beta Colony.
Yeah, so kind of Romeo Juliet kind of thing, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
But even more so, you know, these star-crossed lovers.
Yeah, and you think, well, they're so different. They can't get together and stuff. But, of course, they kind of fit together because they what one has doesn't the other have. And
For me, their relationship was straight away. Like, when you meet someone for the first time, there's this kind of, inequality of a relationship. And because I think Aril Vorkosigan comes from this very kind of patriarchal, misogynistic society, very sexist society anyway, so everything is like, yes, there, and you there are strong women in that society, but he meets someone and just goes, this is what I need.
Yeah.
And of course you've got that whole thing that he's bisexual, and how much of his bisexuality was that he was wanting a manly woman, but like a strong woman.
Yeah.
And he wasn't getting that. And all the women who were around him at his level of society were like, ooh, save me. Save me. But like, you know, when you read it, this, you're going to think, well, is this person going to be a damsel in distress?
Yeah.
You know, Cordelia, she is, I mean, of course, in that first book, she is a damsel in distress a few times, but nobody comes to her rescue. She always comes to her own rescue.
She has to do it herself, and she was brought up to do it herself, and she's not like, oh my God, I need a man to save me.
Yes.
I can't live by myself in a forest, in a jungle, on a planet that I don't know and stuff. And to begin with, when I then continued reading with The Warrior's Apprentice, and I also read the epilogue of Cordelia's Honor.
Yeah.
It kind of made clear in my head that when they had to take care about the guy, Dubauer, how you pronounce him?
What, like, we're talking right at the very beginning of Cordelia's Honor.
No, Shards of Honor.
Yeah, right at the very beginning. Yeah, someone gets hit by a nerve disruptor and is kind of brain damaged, and they have to look after him, and he's a child, and Aril Vorkosigan's like, oh no, we'll just kill him, I'll just slit his throat and it'll be better for him in the long run. And they're like, no, you can't do that, you've got to look after this disabled person.
Yeah.
This person who can't look after themselves, we have to look after him together.
And so this guy is like a disabled guy, and he's like a one-year-old baby in the body of
an adult,
of an adult. And so that's their first challenge together.
Yeah.
And it
but
kind
that's
of...
repeated time and time again in these first book, in this first book. And this is what I really enjoyed about those first books, is that all the time, especially these characters together, they have to look after disabled people, like physically disabled people or mentally disabled people. Of course, this first one, it starts off and it's like, bang, your mission is to go 200 miles with someone who doesn't have full cognition and can't even hold himself upright and all this other kind of
and
stuff.
And through a planet that has, like, weird creatures in it. And, oh, that was, well, also good fun, like, the creatures they met.
I can't really remember. By the river, was it?
By the river there was these, like, I don't know, the jellyfishes that, that were in the air and then went down
these flower, these flower things.
And they took out the blood, like, and then there were the furry
To be honest, I don't remember the you just read these because Juliana just went straight through these. It's been less than a week since you started reading it, and you've gone through all three novels in about a week from beginning to end. So it was a while ago that I read that or listened to that story. But so you start off with that, and then you've got Kadulka, who is another guy who actually seems to be like in that first book. In Shards of Honor. At the end, he's like, oh, and now he's there as well. I was like, oh, what was he doing in this story? He's not very important. And then I realized, like, in the next story, suddenly he's a main character. I'm like, oh, right, okay, she was introducing this character. Yeah. So when he comes around in the next story in Barriar, that makes a lot of sense. And I was like, okay, that makes a lot of sense. And then you've got Bathari, which is who is the guy who is obviously very troubled in his head. And in the first book, he's like, Cordelia kind of tries to heal him, and in the next book he's part of the family, well, not part of the family, but part of the family bodyguards, and again they're always trying to do that to sort that out. And then when I think those are the main kind of disabled people that are mentioned in that first in that first novel, but then in the Barriar, which is the second of these kind of preview novels, Barriar, I really liked it, and again at the end, spoilers for those who don't know what goes on, is that at the end, like, all of the able-bodied people and all of the men and all of the soldiers are going, we'll just wait this out and this will be good and this we'll do this, and then Cordelia does the Ripley shit of like, right, I'm going in and getting my kid out of here, no problem at all. And so the band, like her, that little quest, which takes up the last quarter of Barriar, she gets together a group of disadvantaged people. So she has two women, Kadulka, who's like physically disabled. He can't walk properly, and he has to use a walking stick. But he has a sword stick, but it's pretty much he needs a walking stick just to get around. And Bathari, who is always on the edge of falling apart mentally, and is never, and he does even during that when she says, "Okay, kill this guy," he does, and he just like breaks down. And so in the end, it's sort of like the disadvantage. There isn't a single able-bodied. I guess Bathari is very able-bodied, but, he is... they're all disabled people or disadvantaged people in their society.
In Barriar thinking.
Yeah. So those people go in, and the people that help them along the way is, like, a guy with a cart full of cabbages, and then when they need shelter, they go into a brothel, and, along the way, it's the underdogs helping each other. Underdogs helping each other against this very patriarchal society. And that's what I really enjoyed about this. And then this is all a big build-up, that you understand that this is all setting the stage for Miles Volkosigan.
Yeah, it actually does. And... But I quite like enjoyed also to read the afterword that was put into Cordelia's honor, which then told the story of how Lois Bujold McMaster, what was her name?
Lois McMaster Bujold.
Yeah.
Oh yes, how it's she, like the author's note on the end.
Yeah. How she published that, and because this is not the first. These two books are not the first book that were published, but it was were the first book she wrote.
Yes.
And then she tried to send that to a publisher. And because, it was quite a
it's
chunky
just too
book.
Chunky. And yeah. then... I mentioned this in my last podcast as well.
Yeah, and then the publisher said, you have to short it down and stuff, and it didn't work. And so she didn't publish that.
No, it was only the second one. It was only Barriar that she didn't publish. The first one, Shards of Honor, was put out, and then Warrior's Apprentice was put out, and then Barriar was put out later.
Yeah, but anyway, it was really fun to also read the like story
the writing
of,
process.
Yeah, the writing process and how that can affect a series if you have the books not appearing in the order that you wrote it.
Yeah.
And I could not actually imagine not having read Cordelia's Honor before The Warrior's Apprentice.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it is quite different. It is really different. Because in The Warrior's Apprentice, you lose kind of the contact to the characters that you had in, yes. in the first two books.
Yeah, this is what I'd say. And this is what we're talking about when we're reading. Because we kind of, like, I read the first two books, and these first few books, and then... And then it was as Juliana was reading it, she was reading the paper book and I was listening to the audio book, and then I would go get a bit further ahead and then she would get a bit further ahead. So we were like reading along with this, and I was just like, and we're having these conversations like, how can anybody like keep track of who is who and what's going on and like who the emperor is and why it's important and why Miles, like all of these questions, like why was Miles even disabled? And it's just, you know, it's just kind of like a throwaway comment in this. It's like, you know, which is just like, oh, yes. And when my mother was pregnant with me, she was a gas attack and she got through okay. But my bones turned to jelly and they sorted me out and that was it.
And that when he's telling the backstory himself, everything seems to be very...
kind of matter of fact.
Yeah, it's not so... Like in the first two books, it is like when that happens, it's like really... It's terrible. You feel with the characters when they go through the gas attack and then how they save the baby and put it into the thingy. And
the only thing I knew about the Miles Vorkosigan saga before I started reading this anything was that there was a guy called Miles Vorkosigan and that the first few books were about his mother rather than about him.
I didn't know that.
You didn't even know that. No. Yeah, exactly. So we... Like, by the end, like, as I was reading through, I didn't know, and of course this is going to come as no surprise to anybody who has ever read any one of these books, like, from, you know, any of these, from The Warrior's Apprentice onwards, I didn't know that Miles Vorkosigan was disabled or was easily disabled by his bones breaking, and that he was really short, and that he has to get through everything with his quick thinking and quick talking and just bullshitting and lying and being super dishonest and everything at every step along the way. I didn't know that. So when I was reading the Cordelia's Honor, I didn't know that when this baby was gassed and they said, oh yeah, he might die. And I'm like, well, I know he's not going to die. And I don't mind that, you know, because... You know, when you're reading a book, you always think, well, the main character, they're probably going to get through to the end okay, unless you're reading an Ian M. Banks book, and then they, you know, there's a good chance, there's a 50-50 chance that they're going to die by the end of it, which is fine. I don't mind that either. But, like, you just think, well, what about this character? What about that character? And at the beginning of Warrior's Apprentice, it's just like, yes, and he's disabled, and yes, this person is doing here, oh, and that person is over there, and this person died when he was young, and this person... And all of the mystery would have been taken out of it. And this is another thing that I don't like. I mean, of course, most people are going to be listening to this and go, oh, I don't mind spoilers. But I can't imagine reading those two first books not like already knowing which characters are going to die in the next book. For example, there's the TV show. I'd mentioned this yesterday, didn't I? I think, or the day before. Mm-hmm. The TV show Firefly.
Oh, yeah.
And Serenity. I watched the movie Serenity not knowing it was part of a series. And so I know that there's someone who dies at the very end of it. And then I watched the TV show all the way through. But all the time I was watching this TV show, I was like, but that character doesn't make it through to the end of the story. You know, the story is complete, but that person doesn't make it through to the end. And then I watched it. But then when I was doing that, I was actually watching it with Paula, my previous girlfriend. And she watched it through. She just watched the series first, and then we watched the movie together at the end. And then she was just like, "Oh, but I..." And all of the emotional connections that you build up with the character who then dies in the very end of the story,
and you don't know about it.
You don't know him. So when he dies, I didn't get that like emotional reaction to somebody dying suddenly. It's just like, oh yeah, it's a movie. People die in movies. But that doesn't really happen so much in TV shows. Of course, I think that's changing now, like when everyone's talking about this Game of Thrones and they're like, holy shit, the Red Wedding and stuff. You probably haven't kept up with any of that. But apparently like half of the characters just get killed off and stuff like that, which I know that kind of stuff happens in those books and in the TV show. But Yeah, but like I'm saying, you build up an appreciation of a character, so when they die, it means something to you. But then if you know that they're going to die, or you know what their end is, you know how they're going to die, like, what they do before that is difficult to make a connection to as well. Yeah. And, yes, there is a character who dies.
I thought we'd do a full spoiler thing.
We are doing a full spoiler.
So then say it.
Bathory, he dies, and I don't think the Warrior's Apprentice earned any amount of emotional connection with Bathory. And I mentioned this on my previous podcast that I thought he was one of the most interesting characters. He was the character who I really wanted to know how things turned out for him. Certainly in the first book, as soon as he turns up, I'm just like, wow, who's this guy? Normally it's just like, you get this, you know, he's like the guy's, you first see him, is it on the, it's not on the planet, it's in the ship that they go to time, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, right, so he's the rape master, you know, this thug-headed stuff. And then he becomes a hero in the second thing. It's like, you know, it's like Arnie in Terminator. In the first movie, he's the bad guy. In the second movie, he's the good guy.
I mean, Bathory has to go through some bits and pieces.
Yeah, he goes through...
Before he becomes the hero.
Oh, yeah, he's put through the grinder.
Yeah.
And then here in The Cadet... Sorry, I keep calling it The Cadet because your book is in front of me. Here in The Warrior's Apprentice, he turns up and he's a guy and he's a character and he just comes along and there's a secret about him and then the secret is revealed and then he dies. And I'm just like, you can't just reveal a secret about a guy who we didn't know about.
And then the secret is not important to us because...
Yes, this is another point, like
when you didn't read Cordelia's Honor, like the two books beforehand, you don't know that Cordelia and they were there. They were on Escobar.
Yeah.
That was something we were in that situation.
There was one fact that you find out about in this, which wasn't in the previous one, is that it was actually the prince who said, I don't think that was explained, that they were pregnant.
Yeah, and he liked having sex with pregnant
women. Because he wanted to have sex with pregnant women. So he had other men... make them pregnant, and then he would have sex with them. That wasn't explained in the previous books. That was only explained in this one.
Yeah, but the rape thing was quite
The rape
clear.
Was explained. And they're like, they took out her, or they switched off her contraceptive. So it was like they were raping her, trying to get her pregnant. The reason why they were trying to get her pregnant wasn't explicitly explained like it was in The Warrior's Apprentice. But and it's that kind of thing. Like, a main part of the Warrior's Apprentice was this mystery about Elena's background.
Yeah.
And we'd read it already. And for us, it wasn't a mystery. And we're just like, get on with it. Get on with it.
Yeah, but not only that, it wasn't a mystery for us. For us, it was the whole situation was not as banal. Is it banal?
Banal?
Banal.
Banal, yes. Yeah. There is something like that.
And but in the Warrior's Apprentice, all of these... the background that the reader can't know makes the mystery so like banal because and then there's the mother turning up and then it's revealed and then Bathory dies and we have no emotional connection.
Yes,
if you have not read Shards of Honor and Barrier before, you don't have emotional connections to Bathory and to
Elena
Elena Visconti. It's like an Italian name.
Yeah.
And also to his grandfather, you don't have the connection.
Yes, also his grandfather just dies straight away in the first book, and you're just like, but if like how. Yeah, so I was just like, I understand that Lewis McMaster Bujold already had all these characters in mind, and some of them were around in like the first published book, which was Shards of Honor, and some of them made an appearance later on. But like, if you didn't have Barriar in between, you're just like, okay, Bathory, and then at the end, while they're looking after Bathory, and then sure, he goes through a lot in that second book, but I guess I understand that they chose Bathory because he was a major character in the first book, and was switched around. But
and also, for example, like when Lady Vorpatril, I have she's named in English. She's the one that is pregnant and then gets the baby while they are on.
Yes,
the
thing. And it's the cousin who
it's Ivan. Ivan,
yeah,
whatever,
Ivan.
And the father of him dies, and like if you don't know about this whole situation, you don't understand in The Warrior's Apprentice
Why he died, or how he died.
The aunt Vought Patrol is so close to the family, and what is the connection between them? And
yeah, so that's the thing. Ivan just turns up, and you're like, "Hey, Ivan, hey, let's come along."
That? And why is
he? So anyway, all I can say, all of this comes down to, is that if you're ever wanting to tell anybody which order to read these books in, tell them to do it in the internal chronological order. It doesn't matter when they were published or when they were written. It's obvious that this is a story that was designed from the very beginning. All these characters are designed from the very beginning. That's what we want to say about that. Should we move on then to like concentrate actually what happens in here and talk about the story and things that actually
just
happens?
Just one thing I wanted to mention by just looking on the Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
It's quite funny that Shards of Honor was got a prize, a Locus Award.
Yeah, that's a science fiction magazine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then The Warrior's Apprentice got the Locus Award as well, but it wasn't on the 16th
place, yeah.
So, and Barrier,
yeah,
it got the Hugo Award,
well, it's because
and the Locus Award, and nominated for Nebula and Seiyun, but I find that quite
telling.
Yes. Yeah? I mean,
The Warrior's Apprentice is such a minor book compared to, and I thought that Barrier wasn't as good as Shards of Honor. Yeah. Now that I've read Warrior's Apprentice, it's gone up. It's actually gone way higher in my opinion. And now I'm actually thinking, oh, maybe I should go back and change my rating of that, because now actually reading what happens afterwards or what it was actually setting up, I think it is, I don't know. It's difficult to say.
Yeah, the words of the book gets...
It gets higher now that I know what it's leading to in a way. Mm. Anyway, so let's...
The Warrior's Apprentice?
Yeah, let's actually talk a bit more about what happens in here. It starts, and Miles, this is strange. This is why I wanted to say it's weird with that it's a book about Miles, and it's called, in German, The Cadet.
Yeah.
And it's called The Warrior's Apprentice. And you understand that it's like, if you take this as a, that the apprentice is Miles Vorkosigan, well, he's not an apprentice at all, except you could say he's maybe an apprentice of his father, that all the time that he's been his father's apprentice.
I think this is mentioned.
Well, Elena is the cadet. Because she goes along and she is the cadet.
And she's trained by Miles.
She's trained kind of by Miles as he goes along. And she's kind of his apprentice. So, massive spoiler, by the end, when she goes off and she takes the new fleet that they've established, this new mercenary company, she goes off, and I think it's actually Baz and her. It's not really quite sure which one is which.
But she's the leader. She's the commander of the new crew, though.
Yes, of the new crew. So maybe she is. Anyway, it's just one of those things. Like, who is the Warrior's Apprentice? Because I'm not sure. It can be Miles, because nobody's ever in charge. Because he wants to get into officer's training, and there's this whole thing where Bathory saying, "Oh yes, I'm saving for her dowry,
wedding.
For her wedding, for a dowry." And yes, someone has to be someone needs to be an officer. It's definitely in an officer level. And straight away, I'm thinking, "Oh okay," but of course, that can't be Miles because he's not an officer. So all the time, I was thinking, "Well, is he now going to have to try and make himself into an officer to get this?" And of course, just to talk about their relationship between her and Eleanor, he's all like, "I love you, I love you, I love you." Oh, but there's Baz over here, and you're like, "Oh," you know. And you realise that actually that was all being set up because he's going to make Baz into an officer, this deserter who makes into an officer. So yes, I kind of understand. But anyway, he gets chucked out of he doesn't get chucked out of the school. He doesn't even pass the test to get into the school. Yeah, he doesn't pass the physicals.
I mean, I don't really know. In the book, it is kind of like you, as the reader, gets set into the mindset that Miles made a mistake.
Yeah.
But right from the very beginning, when they said, "Oh, these are the physical things you had to go through," and you know that right from the beginning,
it was very convenient.
He had to climb up a 20 meter high.
It was 5
wall,
meter.
Oh, however, and then jump down. So right by that, it was clear that he can't jump down there.
No.
And then, but then it is kind of like made as when he goes through and he gets because he has this the other guy that does it the same time with him.
Yeah, his pacemaker,
and then in his mind, he has not the right mindset to jump down or something.
Yeah.
But I think that's just bullshit because
no.
he couldn't do it. There was no way that he could have made that without breaking his legs.
No, it said he could have... No, I think it's quite clear. It says he could have climbed down the other side, but he'd have lost too much time. So he jumped instead. Okay. So there's two ways of looking at it. It's like either he... I mean, he's no way that you look at it. He's the luckiest man alive ever in the whole universe. Yeah. And he's obviously portrayed as someone who is super clever. And even when he's not being super clever and he makes a mistake, because he's so super clever, the mistake comes down in his favor anyway.
Yeah.
So it was really strange that he only has, there is literally one bit of bad luck in the, or two bits. One is Bothari dying, which is, it wasn't even luck, you know, it didn't really matter. It didn't matter. Nothing mattered.
And that was something that I didn't like about the book, that the death of Bothari didn't matter.
He just died,
and then that's it. There was nothing, like, he was then missing later on or something. That didn't happen. He just disappeared.
He just disappeared from the story.
Well, he's not important anymore.
Yeah, it's like he died because his backstory was revealed, and there had to be some kind of tension between him and Elena. And that kind of felt it. And it's just like, that's not really worth it. But what I'm saying is, like, he breaks his legs at the beginning, which is bad luck. And then everything goes right for him, except his friend dies.
Yeah.
Every single thing goes right for him. Yeah. And then at the end, everything just goes right for him, and he gets home, and everything's gone right for him. It's not as if anything... I never even got the hint that anything could go bad.
Yeah.
Like, even when I was reading the previous books, I always thought, like, okay, Cordelia is going to make it to the end of these books. I don't know. And I know that someone called Miles Vorkosigan is going to be born by the end of it. That's all I knew. And I was thinking, you know, Errol Vorkosigan could die. The old Duke could die. Bothari could die. Anyone could die. And lots of people do die in those books.
Oh, yes.
So it's not as if, things actually mattered and things went wrong. Like, when she gets hit by that gas attack, there was something in my throat going, and now there's bad news. It's like, what's the bad news? Like, your son, you know, he's going to die. Oh, what can we do? And it was like, yes, this actually matters. There's stuff going on here.
And there's stuff going wrong.
Stuff going wrong. And then there's the people take over. And even when she didn't realize how bad it was, like, you know, there's that whole kind of revolt and overthrow of the government.
Yeah.
And people turn to her and pretty much say, oh, yeah, we knew this was going to happen. That's why you're here at Vorkosigan Serlo rather than in the city. Really? Yeah, we've been keeping... Really? And then they all have to go off and do stuff that matters.
Yeah.
And stuff matters and there's things at stake. There's things going on, like there's the overthrow of the government is bad news for everyone. And in the first book, there's an invasion going on. Like, there's actually a Barriar is invading another planet. They're taking over another planet. This is bad news in the kind of same way, like in the First World War, in the Second World War. It's like, no, we've got to stop these people.
And
there's
also,
actually,
like,
it matters.
Also, when Cordelia comes home to Beta Colony...
Beta Colony,
beta.
But I do like your pronunciation of beta or beta. You say it's Beta Colony,
yeah,
and it is
German. It's the we get the Greek.
Better. Yeah, but it's better as in it's worse
there.
And didn't you understand? This is what I was trying to say to you.
Yeah, but in my head, it's just
it's better.
Better Colony.
It's the Better Colony.
It kind of is.
It is. It's better than Barriar.
Anyway, but when she goes back after the first book, she's like kind of treated like a hero.
Yeah.
And then everything turns wrong. And like it's not. She's not the hero, and she's not the.
Well, she is the hero, but she's. But yeah, it's like, okay, you've done this adventure, and now we think you're mentally ill. You're the mentally ill one. She's like,
yeah.
No, I'm the sane one. No, you've got the Stockholm Syndrome. No, I'm not. They brainwashed you. And she's like,
no,
they haven't. You know, and all, it's a fantastic scene. It's fantastic writing because because the main character is put under pressure. Of course, by then, she's a war hero, so the main thing has been, the main invasion has been stopped. But she's got still massive issues to work out for herself. Fast forward to Warrior's Apprentice, and we might as well just lay it out. Miles Vorkosigan, something goes wrong, which would have been avoidable if he'd have been lucky at that point, like he was for the rest of the book, but he breaks his legs. And then he goes on a trip, and it's a trip that he wanted to go on because he wanted to, you know...
There's
this mystery. And it's a mystery that we don't care about because we already know the answer to this mystery. So we don't care about the mystery. So He's going on a journey that he wants to go on anyway to find out about a mystery which we already know the answer to.
Yeah.
So that's boring. So I was literally going, there is nothing here that's interesting me except, you know, quite, you know, the writing is a bit strange. I've got some notes here about the writing as well. But, you know, I'm just going through it and I was like, okay, when does the story start? And then they're going through the immigration.
Yeah.
And then he randomly overhears a conversation, sticks his nose in, and ends up buying a starship. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, he's got himself a starship. Now they're going to use this to go to Escobar, or to go and do something to find the thing that they need to do to find out about what, you know, where is Eleanor's mother?
Yeah.
And I thought that's
I thought that was the
this
point.
Is going to be yeah. this is going to be the main point of the story. Where is Eleanor's mother? This is the only thing I had to go on at that point. And then he goes off and he turns up somewhere else and someone says, oh, there's a guy here living in this rubbish dump, this recycling center. What is he? Oh, he just happens to be a Bariaran engineer officer or something like
that. And I think at that point already he was thinking of that he need a crew.
Yeah, it's like, oh.
To be honest,
I wasn't quite sure if he knew that he was going to even be the captain of the ship or something like that. At that point, he's just like, oh, I've got this ship out here. Yeah. I was thinking, well, he could do it. And it did remind me a little bit, there was this website of this guy who, it was called A Pencil to a House. I can't remember the exact name of the website, but he had a pen and he would swap the pen for something. And then he swapped it. And in the end, he says, I want a house. I want to own a house by the end of this. And he did. He swapped this for that, and then this for that, and then this for that. Mm. And it kept on going up and up and up. And he kept on swapping things. And, you know, more people found out about it. And he got a barbecue and swapped a barbecue for a chainsaw and swapped a chainsaw for a thing. Then he managed to get a car. And then he swapped it for like a famous musical instrument or something. And then it got all the way up until, like, oh, I was awarded like a day in a recording studio, and at the end of it, I'd have my own pop song or something. And then he swapped that with the council, and the council said, oh, we've got this empty house over here that you can have if we do this big kind of like talent search thing in the city square. And by the end of it, you can have this house. And he did. He managed to get from like a red pencil or a pencil sharpener or whatever it is. And he swapped stuff and it took him like 40 different steps. And he managed to get a house at the end of it. And I was thinking, okay, and this, again, this did feel a bit like what Miles was doing. It's like, oh, he's got this starship. He swapped some radioactive wasteland for this. He paid it back in the end, but it was just a security.
It was like very much of a trick thing.
Yes, you could see that happening, no problem at all. Yeah. It's like, yes, and we managed to do that in an hour. So in an hour, he owns a starship. And you're like, okay, where is it going to go from here? And it did happen that way, that he did that, and then he managed to get a bigger starship. But I'm just saying, still at this point, I'm like, what is the main story? And then something else random happens, and then something else random happens, and then they're like, oh, and now we're going to go off to this place. And suddenly, we're in a war zone, and he takes him, his bodyguard, the love of his life, and these two new crews, and he takes them to a war zone.
And the guy who is like the
Baz, the engineer. The guy who actually who owns the weapons, who wants these weapons delivered. Yeah. So it's just like, why did he immediately pick the most dangerous, most expensive
To
get the money. But as soon as he turns up, it's just like, oh, okay, so he'll be able to turn up, he'll get through there, he'll deliver this, and then with that, he'll use those weapons for something cool, and then he'll pick them up, and then they'll go to Escobar, and then they'll find out where their mother is.
That was my thought as well.
But they turn up, and suddenly the story stops. And it becomes this other story. Of course, everyone knows this, but it's just like, all the time I was reading this, literally, we're getting through to 60% of the way through the book, I'm just like, why am I caring about this guy who's swapping a starship for a bigger starship and then using that starship to get a space station and then using the space station to get that?
And then he's using the crews and like he's doing
he's
that.
He's sending people to the death. People are dying.
Yeah, and it's a weird way how he's influencing people.
He's lying all the time.
Yeah, he took them as prisoners and then by influencing them in this weird kind of psychological way, he made them want to become his part of his soldier army kind of
mercenaries
so and like in the end it looks as if they would have decided to do that free willingly but they didn't
some of them did like but there was never what I didn't like about this like, because he obviously has the thing like Cordelia, and I mentioned this in a previous podcast, and I've talked to you about it as well, that Cordelia has this way of going like, hey, you're not on my side. Really, you should be on my side. Why should you be on my side? Because it's the right thing to be. I have the moral high ground. I'm the prisoner. I'm, you know that I'm the one in the right here. You come over to my side. And she does that time and time again. But she has that moral and ethical and legal authority in some ways to do it. So even when she gets to the end and she gets someone, she says, you, cut off that person's head. That means a huge amount because she has managed to maintain that. So when she does like have that moment, not, I wouldn't say of weakness, but that moment of viciousness where she says, you cut off that purpose head, it's like, yes, you have earned the respect and the command of these people. You know, you're old enough to be able to do all of this. You know, you've gone, you've had all your spaceship command, and you're already an officer. No, she was already a ship commander right at the very beginning.
She was a captain.
Yeah, she was a captain. And Aril Vokhozagan also had that kind of stuff. So when he was saying to his men, men, do this, men, do that, yeah, they would go for it. And also you could kind of see the Duke do that as well, you know, the grandfather.
But when Cordelia says, cut off that man's head, in the end, that turns out to be very, very, very important.
Yes.
And what Miles is doing,
it's not about, like, there's these mercenaries who are fighting for one side in this war, and he's fighting for the other side.
Suddenly he takes influence.
He never once says, what is this war about? What are the two sides in this war? Why are these people winning and why are these people not winning? Which side of the war are you on? And you convince me. Of course, these mercenaries, they're going to fight for you know, the right side. They're going to fight for the right paying side. But he's not even getting paid properly. And all the people he's fighting for, he convinces them to switch sides in the war so easily. And I'm just like, but what's this war about? Like, Escobar was being invaded by Barrier. It's like, we want to save Escobar because we want them not to be invaded, you know. And you're like, okay, that's a good thing. Watch this war going down this planet between the Ossians and the
Persians
or whatever. Yeah. I don't know. Whatever the two sides are. That whole conflict didn't matter to me. So at no point did I ever want Miles to succeed in this weapons delivery. And then when he was succeeding in the weapons delivery, that was sort of just like, oh yeah, and the weapons have gone and now we've got to do this. But by then, this whole other part of him building up this mercenary fleet had taken over, and I don't care about mercenary fleet. I cared about all of the politics and all of the battles and everything that happened in the Shards of Honor and Barrier because the conflicts meant something. It wasn't just like who is going to be the king and all the peasants, everything for the peasants is going to be the same. Everything is going to be the same for all of the people. They're going to pay the same tax. They're going to live in the same places. They're going to be under the same squalid conditions, but the emperor changes. That story has nothing. That story doesn't interest me at all. Who becomes king at the end doesn't matter. But if it's going to be like it was in Barrier, a more progressive, enlightened person ruling and keeping in control of the emperor, or a usurper, reactionary, you know, military
like
kind of
Barrarian, typical soldier guy.
Yeah, typical soldier guy who's gonna still subjugate women and gonna, you know, kill disabled people and all this other kind of stuff. Then all of that battle and all of that struggle at the end of Barrier, that really, really meant something. Even though I was a bit bored by, I mean, I thought they could have got a bit through the cave exploring bit in the middle and the big trekking through. It's just like, they could have skipped over, you know, a good chunk of a few chapters in the middle. They could have condensed out into one chapter.
The Warrior's Apprentice in the middle, like, it just goes on and on and on. And every time there's more, like, as a coincidence happens and another one happens and another one happens.
Yeah, he just happens to overhear this.
And
yeah.
Miles is just in a position like he's so arrogant.
Yeah.
He's so arrogant the whole way through. And then it's like the peak of that for me was when somebody, like, the people try to call him commander or some kind of
admiral
or something. Yeah. And he always said, no, I'm Mr. Naismith.
Yeah.
And then at some point, there was one guy who said commander, and he didn't correct him.
Yeah, so suddenly he becomes the admiral
and
commander.
Suddenly, he is like the head of a soldier army, and yeah, that's just so arrogant. And I think, like, I really liked it a lot better when he just stayed with the, oh yeah, I'm Mr. Naismith.
Yeah, I thought it would have been really cool if he was that, but he was just inflated and inflated and inflated. And, like you say, he overheard a conversation, got himself a starship, then somebody else turned up who just happened to be this thing. And then there just happened to be this weapons delivery that just happened to be made, and then he went through, and they just happened to get a ship which wasn't very well under control, and they just happened to do the right thing.
And then the
other people just happened to do this. And then the main mystery, which I thought was going to be the main driving of the plot, this is the worst thing. It's suddenly like, oh yeah, and there's this woman from Escobar who just happens to be called Eleanor, who just happens to sign on with this and just happens to come onto the shoot, and she just and Bathory just happens to be there. And it's just like, well, how, what, like, did that woman know that Bathory was going to be on there? Was it like, oh, this is going to be
no.
She yeah, just... it's like, is this going to, oh, this guy's from Barriar, so I'm going to go up and fuck up the Barriars because, you know, I'm going to get back at them. And she just happens to find the one man who raped her and her daughter there. It's just like, she just happens to be there. She's like, oh yeah, she was in the army, and now she's a technician, she was installing this stuff, and she's been stuck here since the war began, and now she's on the ship, and now she's killing Bathory, and hey, here's your mother. You're just like, no, you've got to work towards that. You can't, that kind of stuff can't just be awarded to you on a plate. And in any book, in any fiction book, I'll allow for, like, two coincidences, because if there's only one coincidence, well, coincidences happen all the time. You know, it's a small world, and it's a big, actually, it's a medium-sized world, so they happen rarely enough that when they do happen, they're special, but the world is small enough that they happen enough that they actually happen, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's a one in a million chance. If something happens one in a million, it happens to three people in Berlin every day, you know?
If
what
the all the coincidences with the soldier army beforehand wouldn't have happened, it wouldn't have been so much of a...
Yes, that's what I'm saying. You're allowed one stroke of good luck, one coincidence, and, like, one major event. Because, like, if you introduce the book saying there was this massive catastrophe, and this is always the thing that happens with these, you know, these big post-apocalyptic, or not apocalyptic, you know, like your big Independence Day kind of things. It's like, okay, we're going to tell the story of the people who lived through to the end and were heroes. And you're like, okay, no matter what happens, they're going to live through to the end. But if you just start off the story and, like, okay, something really, really bad is going to happen, and you just happen to follow eight people and they all make it to the end, you're just like, well, it wasn't that bad. You know, millions of other people die. So it's one of those things that it's a give and take. It's like, how much randomness can I... how much randomness that always goes the way of the main character can I take and still be interesting? It could be well written. It could be interesting events that happen, but how can I root for the guy when everything is going his way? And then, so all of that happens, and he gets this thing, he loses the girl, which is meant to be bad luck, but actually it was probably really good luck for her, and probably good luck for him, because he's now free to, you know, have love adventures, and Baz, interesting-ish character, you know, he's no Bathory, but, you know, he you can see he's going to turn up again later. And then this whole war, all this stuff that's happening there, suddenly the general of the army turns up and just like, oh yeah, actually we've got it under control here. We don't really need your help. You just sort out these other mercenaries and we can deal with this war. So it's just like, yeah, we've got the weapons now. And I'm just like, there's still a third of the book to go.
Yeah.
And the main conflict, which has taken over as a conflict, is that conflict in that system with this war between the two sides. It's just like this guy goes, oh no, we can handle it.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, so what's left to do? And all that was left to do was to get round the other, and it just, there was just no benefits. I was just like, if you're mercenaries and you're not getting paid, why would you ever go and sign up for your enemy who stopped you getting paid?
Yeah.
And if that was the case, when you turn up there, you'd think, first things first, pay me.
Yeah,
that's what it would be. Like, you've stolen all our pay from over here. We're gonna join up with you. Give us our money now, and we won't fight you anymore. But there was nothing. It was just like, oh yeah, and all my men, they're all coming over to your side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't understand, like, the whole money thing, that what actually was actually a bit too much
for me. What, the beta colony dollars and this stuff?
No, the whole, and he has to pay the guy whom he bought the first ship from, and then he has to pay...
It was a Ponzi scheme. It was all just a Ponzi scheme.
There, and there, and suddenly at the end... Well, he has enough money to deal with all of that.
You know, like Ponzi scheme, multi-level marketing, that the people who come in and join pay for the people at the top. you know, like Amway and these other things. So what happens is that, like, you join up and you say to someone, hey, give me $100. And they say, why? And it's like, well, I'll give you this bit of paper. And if you show this bit of paper to people, three other people will give you $100. And you're okay. Like, oh, yeah, like that. And so then all of those people go, oh, I've got this thing and 10 people can give me this. And of course, once you get down to like five levels, everybody in the world has to give someone $100. And of course, then nobody gives any. And that's the way that pyramid schemes work. And it felt like very much like this. It's like, I've taken over your ship. Ah, but don't worry. You'll have the next ship that we take over. Yeah. And they do that. And then the next guy goes, ah, but don't worry. We've got this ship and then we've got the bigger warship. When we get the even bigger warship in, you get this one. And then we'll take over this plant here, this space station, and then the commander
of that spaceship. Yeah, and this is what happened with the two first captains.
Yeah, they got like upgraded to where
they got as prisoners. There was this Captain Orson.
Yeah.
And then there was the Captain
Thorn.
No. Was it Thorn?
Thorn got Orson's ship, but then Orson got the next guy's ship.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Tongue was there. So it was a bit confusing because the name Thorn and Tongue was like a bit confusing to me. And also because these characters didn't really mean anything to me.
No.
Because they were not really like...
They were just placeholders. They were just units in an Amway Ponzi scheme.
We haven't had like a close relationship. I mean, the Tongue guy was a bit more like that because he was more like a guy who had a conversation with Miles and he tried to escape and he did the thing. But I didn't care about these people.
But then Tongue, can't remember what it was. Tongue. So then Tongue turns up, massive coincidence number 413 in this book. And it's like, oh, and it's about like this guy called Owl Vorkosigan, who was commanding of this, and the butcher of whatever it was, or something.
Yeah, the butcher of Kamar.
Kamar. And this Kamar battle, he wrote his memoir about this, and this is just amazing. I'm his biggest fan ever. I'm his biggest fan, blah, blah. And this is what I was talking about to you yesterday. It's just like, so the biggest fan of this guy doesn't recognize, and it's like, oh, what's your name? My name is, like, Miles Naismith. And you're like, wait a second, you're the biggest fan? Like, and this was the thing that I couldn't get my head around. How did nobody recognize Naismith's name? Like, Cordelia Naismith comes back. It's like saying, like, of course she was a big hero, but she was only sticking around for a while and then she went away again. But that was a big scandal. Okay. It's like saying...
And let me just explain that to you as I did yesterday.
Yeah.
The guy, the Tongue guy, he is a fan in soldier history. He's interested in war history.
Yes.
And he is kind of a fan of... Lord Vorkosigan as a soldier and a warrior, and he's all the fan about all the tactics he's doing.
Yes,
and stuff.
I understand all that. But...
And no, let me just finish that. And in the thinking of a warrior and a soldier, having a woman there. It is no importance at all.
Yeah, but
and
it's
also
like Hitler and Eva Braun or Roosevelt and Eleanor Roosevelt or...
Yeah, but always, like, these guys weren't, like, warriors. They were politicians.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah, really.
No, but you say politician. Owl Vorkosigan was the prime minister and regent of the emperor.
Yes, but he lives in a society where women have...
No, but the other guy... wasn't Barryarian, and he was a big fan. Anyway, my point is it's not just him. It's like, no, it's like, oh yes, and I'm Owl Vorkosigan's son, but that's a secret. And none of the other Barryarians are like, what's your name? Naismith. And nobody was just like, wait a second. And then in the end, I think Baz turned out that he was also Vorkosigan, or someone, no, what was the other guy? Oh yeah, there was another guy who was just like, oh yeah, and Ilion, who's the main
security guy.
He's got a guy in the communication center of this other thing. And it's just like, that's convenient, you know, really convenient.
But let me just get back to Cordelia and why her name is not known. In the first two books, when she goes to Barrier, she's always referred to as Lady Vorkosigan.
Yes, that is true.
Her name never actually turned up. Really not. Her name was
not. The thing is, that's not on Barrier. So that I understand there is a bit of a disconnect there, but it was just seems a bit strange that all these people from Barrier didn't pick up on this. People who were on Barrier who lived on Beta for a long time, people from Barrier who were massive fans, or not people like people not from Barrier who were massive fans, but then just nobody managed to put the two and two together. Nobody.
No.
And I just and for me that just it really strained credibility that Miles Vorkosigan calling himself Mr. Naismith, obviously from Barrier, says that he's had personal conversations with Errol Vorkosigan, and there's people from Vorkosigan with him, and Bathario's there, and nobody works it out. And for me, that was...
Yeah, what
credibility.
When I would say, okay, I understand you, is that, like, why don't they question the appearance of Bathory?
Yeah.
Like, what guy, like,
yeah, it's like who's he?
Why does he need a kind of, like, a guide and, like, a not a guide, but... a bodyguard with him.
Yeah,
why
also, he was also the Batman as well, who went and cleaned up after
himself. I understand what you were saying in this point, but I really think you don't really know on Beta Colony how many people are called Naismith. Maybe that's just a common name. Maybe that's like just like Miller or Smith. You don't know that. So
Naismith.
Yeah.
It is Smith. Yeah.
So you don't really know how many of these people exist there.
Yes, you're right.
I do understand that it is weird that nobody questioned...
But for me, it was like, okay, so this guy was one of the most important people. He was integral into the royal family, into the imperial family. He was the prime minister all that time. For me, that kind of level of fame would be like... I'm not saying it's Princess Diana, but Diana was like, you know... And, like, what's Diana's maiden name?
Spencer.
Yeah, you know it. Everybody knows it, so...
Yes, but this is a very special case.
I know, but I'm just saying that...
I don't really know... How was the name of Camilla?
Camilla Parker Bowles.
Yeah, I totally forgot that.
But I'm just saying, that is at the level of society. Like, these people are the most important, most famous people in their entire society. Some of the most important in this entire war. These two people were the most important people.
Yeah, but she was Lady Vorkosigan. She was not Cordelia Naismith.
She was on Beta. Anyway, that's enough of that. Let's move on with this. So, Ivan turns up and then introduces what... And, like, literally, like, a quarter... Like, there's only, like, a few chapters through to the end of the book, and suddenly... The main conflict in the book comes up, which actually needed resolving, and that's like, and they turn up and say, "Ah, there's this thing, and there's these rumors out here, and they want to," and there's this whole conspiracy thing that Ivan didn't notice, but you know,
of course, Miles,
he picks up straight away
from the description,
a very lucky,
of Ivan. And he got
the black wraparound
and other things, and then there was this pergament, and it has
parchment.
Parchment. Okay, whatever it's called, and
scroll.
it has had the black thing on it.
Yeah,
but he only got knowledge of that because he asked about
the scroll was.
So, and like. And Miles is so clever that he asked the correct questions to find out that there is a thing going on Barrier against his dad again.
And him and Ivan.
And everybody. Just asking questions somewhere in space.
And it just happened that Ivan just happened to be in the room when the orders came through. And the orders for him were being carried with the secret orders from the other person, which he didn't see, but there was going to be there. And he just happened to be in the room with that. So it's all these random stuff happening.
Yeah.
Just happens to do this. And he just happens to know the right person and the right thing.
And also, like, at the beginning, Ivan was introduced to be like a playboy kind of person.
Yeah.
Which then, of course, when he went to Beta Colony and left the ship, he went away with that girl.
Yeah,
and
he left his comm unit behind, yeah. So yeah, it was all set up. But then he's clever enough to get through all this situation. He's clever enough to lie all the way through. He has no moral high ground. He has no morals, ethics. He has got total disregard for the law. And he's clever enough to get all the way through this. But yet he's not clever enough to know the law, which is... you're not allowed your own private armies. And they talked about this, you know, this guy with 2,000 cooks, you know, and that kind of stuff.
Which is pretty clever. I really enjoyed that.
The little story is good. And I like those little touches because it actually made me think, oh, I really miss Barrier. I want to be back and back. You know, I want to get back with these kind of little stories and bits of history, which had been completely lacking from the rest of the book. But then, and here's the interesting thing. He should have known that he was breaking the law, setting up his own military unit.
Yeah.
But his excuse, or the excuse seemed to be, oh, I didn't really want to do that. I was just kind of bluffing my way through because I didn't want to die. It's just like, if you're clever enough to do all of that, you should have been clever enough not to get into this trouble. It's like your own cleverness got you into this situation and got you through it. But your own, if you were really that clever, and if everything wasn't just happening by accident, and if you were actually the driver of this story, you'd have got the ship, you'd have got your first officer, and then you'd have taken a number of very slow, very safe, like bulk smelly things. And it brings us back to like the, you know, the Firefly. It's like, you know, we've got our load, and they're always looking for their load to get
and the
through
load
and
is whatever.
It's just whatever.
Cows.
It's a cow, it's human bodies, it's all this other kind of stuff, and they're just like, yeah, we need something. Let's get something. Let's just get something on here. And he immediately jumps through to literally the most dangerous cargo that he could have had. And then he builds up his own army. And then, so anyway, they get to the end, and then he bluffs his way through and does what he says. And I'm just like, but what's Alvor Kozigan? What's his father and mother? It's like, you know, and all the way through, it just seems to be like, oh yes, what we need a case of, what we need to sort this out is a privileged white male to come in here and sort out all the problems, you know? And he was totally, utterly spoiled all the way through. It's just like, yes, I'll do this and I'll do that and I have this and I can't get the girl I want. And my friend died, who I brought into a war zone. Oh, woe is me. Oh, and this is happening. Oh, ladies. And then at the end, it's like, oh, now we need something sorting out. So his mother, who has been eminently capable all the way through that first book, is suddenly an idiot and didn't see this coming at all and is just sitting around waiting for judgment to be passed on her son. Cordelia wouldn't be doing that. Alvor Kozigan, his father, just kind of sitting around. He's in the place where his son is going to be condemned to death and all this other kind of stuff. And he's just letting it happen. What was he doing? Just waiting for Miles Vor Kozigan to turn up and save the day?
He actually did something clever for his son, which I found then looking at what Miles was doing all the time a bit unfair, because his father actually made the thing that he was like the guy the people that did the four whatever
the other Vors
the other Vor said, oh yeah, he is brought to court because he did this and this and this and his father changed it so it's not they actually put him into court for something worse,
yes,
for being a traitor,
yeah,
which is worse than building up this army, like in the end, what could have happened. So, and his father puts the thing up to something that's worse, being a traitor, and leaving out the stuff about the army. And then when Miles comes back,
he switches it round, that actually is
good for him, because he can then show that he's not a traitor. And this just falls down.
Yeah.
And then because they never brought him to court for having built up the army, that's just no question about it at all.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So there was a little bit going on there, but it did all just depend on Ivan turning up at exactly the right time, them coincidentally being getting back to Beriar at exactly the right moment, walking in during the summing up.
Yeah.
And then the final solution to the problem is like, oh, I'm not allowed an army. I'll just give it to you. And it's like, okay. And you're just like,
to the
Emperor. And just like, but we've already had that in Beriar when Koudelka wasn't allowed. Is it Koudelka? Yeah. Yeah, Koudelka. He wasn't allowed a sword, because only Vors are allowed sword. Yeah. It's just like, unless it's part of your issued weapon, it's like, I will issue you this sword. And it's like, okay, rules done. And it's just like, yeah, but we read that and then Miles kind of just does the same thing again. So, anyway, we've been talking an hour and we got through to the very end of the book. So,
Well, one thing I wanted to mention, because I saw that yesterday on Goodreads.
Yeah.
Somebody wrote. I'll just bring up the Goodreads, and maybe I can read it out.
No, because it'll be on your Goodreads. People who wrote this.
No, it's in the Varys Apprentice here.
Yeah. These are my friends' reviews. So unless we have the same friends.
Okay.
So is it friends' reviews? Here's the community reviews.
Yeah. Kathleen rated it 4 stars.
Yeah.
And she wrote a note with it that.
Oh, yeah, this is about the writing.
Written in 1986, Bujold includes a hermaphrodite as a major secondary character. What's disturbing is how she refers to Thorn as it rather than he or she or some gender neutral pronoun. In English, he is sometimes used to refer to male or female, but if she doesn't like that, why not invent such a pronoun?
And Shim. It's.
Yeah. Oh, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting, because when I read it, I was, what?
In German, they changed it to P.
In the translation, which was made in 1993, I think, all the way through, Thorn is referred as he. And I had never had the problem of referring to him being an hermaphrodite.
Yeah.
Because actually, for me, it was a man.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really clear.
Oh, no, for me, it was very hermaphrodite.
Of course.
But just due to the language.
If you do it, it is quite like, even if it's like really racist, like we just talked about the gender problem. But.
No, it is the right thing.
Yep.
It is an it.
Yeah, in German, you can't call it it. It is like something really like it is whatever.
So what would you say? Do you have a das for
das?
No, I'm just, but like, der, die, das, S. But is there a das is S, which is it?
Yeah, but it is like really like just a lamp. A lamp is it.
Yes, like if someone is thinking, it has to have a pronoun rather than a...
Yeah. So the translator of the book made the decision for me. And
made it very easy.
Made it easy, but then in my head, it's not really clear that he's a hermaphrodite.
No, I think for me, it's
just I think it's just a language problem because we don't really have a word referring to hermaphrodites.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm going to go through, because when I'm listening to these audiobooks, I listen to them on my phone. I always have my phone with me, so I make some notice here about some of the writing stuff. There's two notes which I've already talked about. Treason charges, if so obvious, why a surprise, you know, why, and things like that. But I mentioned before, and this is what I brought up about the Cordelia's Honor, not in Cordelia's Honor, in the second book, Barrier. It starts off with her looking in the mirror, and then she looks at Bathory and describes his face, the idea being that with close viewpoint characters, how do you describe them? Because someone doesn't normally look at themselves and describe themselves for the reader, unless they look in a mirror. And this is done really, 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 really badly in a book called Honor Harrington
book.
On Basilisk Station. That's Honor Harrington. And then it was used in Barrier. In that book, it was very badly. In Barrier, it was really well done because it was used at really great character moments. It's like, yeah, and I would rather use my husband's eyes as a mirror because the way he looks at me, the way he sees me, is great. And then they do this mirror dance at the end. And I thought it was all really great.
And in the end, what I found out by reading the afterword is that Louise McMaster-Bujold actually called these books mirrors before...
That was the working title.
That was the working title. Yeah, so it makes sense.
So I picked up on the right thing that this is a very mirror... The mirrors made sense. In this book, Miles Vokosigan looks himself in the mirror and describes himself by looking in the mirror. And all of the subtlety and all of the stuff that I really liked about it in Barrier was just gone. For me, it just felt like a really clumsy writing technique again. And I've mentioned before about these books that all of the adverbs with the did something inwardly, smiled wryly, and all these kind of stuff. And it's one of those pet things of it. Again, it's like one of these normally described as like a bad writing technique that if you use a lot of these, it's not very well written. And in the previous books, I didn't mind them so much because I was enjoying the books enough that it didn't get on my nerves.
You didn't go through and listen to all that so closely.
Well, I did, and I made notes of them. But I can be more forgiving about a book that I like, even if some of the English language. But check it out. He looked quellingly. I had no idea what looking quellingly is. Did you, like, he looked at her in this way to quell her fears? That would be actually saying what's going on. But when I hear he looked quellingly, I don't, like, it takes me out of the book because I have to think, what does that even mean? And then he looked unseeingly. Like, looking unseeingly...
That doesn't make sense.
It does. Yes, because it's a self-contradictory statement. You can't look unseeingly. You can say he looked out the window but noticed he wasn't paying attention or something like that. He looked away distractedly.
Would mean something like he looked and he wasn't seen by looking at something.
Yeah, okay. But then how about this way? He assured her airily. And I'm like, airily? And I was like, I've never... Yeah,
errily?
It's like, he assured her airily. And it's like, he assured her, but he was wrong. He assured her, but he wasn't right to assure her, you know, or something like that. You know, that's what it means. But, I almost got to pause the audiobook to go, right, let me just understand. How about this? He whistled soundlessly.
What?
Yeah, that's called breathing.
Oh, no, when you do like...
You're whistling. That's... No, there's sound. Whistle... No, you're still whistling. There's still sound. Still sound. No, whistle without sound. No, there's still sound. That's whistling. It's a bad whistle. To whistle soundlessly is this. That's called breathing. Whistling soundlessly is breathing. He shrugged in wonderment. Shrugged in wonderment. Like, again, he shivered inwardly. You know what shivering inwardly means?
No.
Neither do I. I can't get my head around what shivering means. Parts of your body quiver. Well, you shiver inwardly, it means you have a shiver running down your spine.
You should have written down or told me when you put down these notes in which chapters, so I
could
look,
so you
can
look at what the German translation. In this case, I'm sure the German translation is better.
Yeah.
Check this. An involuntary silent whistle. Again, an involuntary silent whistle is this. It's breathing.
I think what she means is that it's not like a.
Yeah,
but like a.
No, that's still, I can still hear it.
But not with a silence proper, with a sound. Proper sound.
So if there must be better ways to write that, or better ways to express that action, or that express that reaction, or opinion, or emotional state than these things, which literally I just go, I didn't even write most of them down. I only wrote them down when, like, you know, I had my phone.
You were annoyed.
Like, well, I was sitting just listening, because if I'm on a bike or doing juggling or something, I don't stop and do that. And then there's all these other ones, like another pet thing about, especially with Stephen King, he always says, if someone says something, just write down he said it or he cried. You know, there's like he asked. You know, there's a few things like that. But there's loads of this. Get me my clothes, he enunciated, and I'm just like. He enunciated. Like, who even says that? And again, if you're writing a book where you're playing a lot with the language and you're playing with writing techniques and you're experimenting, you can get away with it. But this book really felt like a step down from everything I liked about the previous ones. And even worse, and this is going to be, of course, we've gone talk for an hour and 10 minutes now about this, and I want to finish soon to see if Andy Murray has won. all the way through this book, at every point, I was thinking, why aren't I enjoying this more? And it was mostly because I just didn't care about anything that was going on. It was only right at the very end where I started caring. And then it was all wrapped up again, I didn't care about it anymore because I was just like, but yeah, so he comes back and saves the day and they have a sit-down meeting. And I realize he's never doing anything that I care about. So nothing he does along the way has any meaning. A good example is... he's in Star Trek, the latest movie that we watched, the Into Darkness.
Yeah.
At one point, they're dropping down on the ship, and they're having this three-way conversation between Kirk and Spock and Uhura about their relationship problems. And they're going like this massive like space, where they're dropping into like Klingon territory, and it's like, oh, what do you say? Don't do that. Don't involve me about this. And it's interesting because what they're doing is important. They're going to, you know, arrest a guy or kill a guy or do a drone strike against a guy or whatever you're meant to be reading into the situation. And yet they're talking about their relationships at the same time, and I was like, this is really interesting. You know, I'm more interested in the relationship stuff because I'm going, well, what's going to happen when they get down and meet Khan? And then, spoiler, so I'm interested in both things. Whereas in this, it's sort of like, and now the action ends, and they're sitting around, and now let's have a conversation about feelings.
Yeah.
And now that's finished. Let's get back to, let's start an adventure. And in Cordelia's Honor, all of the time, it was like, now we're going to have a conversation about our feelings when we're trapped in a mine, when we're stuck in a thing, when we're being chased across the galaxy by, you know, it always felt like the character stuff was coming through during the action and during the battles and during the times of stress, and it made it more important for that. Whereas, wait a second, I don't want to finish this. Whereas all of the relationships with Miles Vorkosigan seemed to develop, like the important ones with Elena, just developed when he was growing up nicely, you know, there was no problems when they're growing up. And with Bathory, oh, Bathory has always been around with him, and his grandfather, oh, he's always been there, you know, all the relationships that we think that were meant to be mean anything weren't forged in fire, they weren't forged in stress and drama, and they were forged in cotton wool and niceness and privilege and less interesting. Your words on this.
What I noticed is about that in the Cordelia's Honor, in the two books, you always start on a certain level and then something happens and you end out on a different level. Like she starts to be her own captain and better colony girl.
Yeah.
And then in the end, she's becoming the Lady Vorkosigan.
Yeah.
So you have a starting point, you have a development with loads of adventure, and you stop at a different point.
But there's a graph along the way with peaks and troughs. Like she starts off as a captain, then she's a prisoner, and then she's a hero, and then she's a prisoner, and then she's a hero. Yeah, no, that goes.
Whatever happens in between, I'm going on for the different levels. Book starts, book ends.
Ah, yeah, I see what you mean. No, yeah.
So, with reading the Warrior's Apprentice, coming to the end of it.
Yeah.
You start in a certain level. You have something in the middle, which does not really appear to you because you're not really attached to it.
Which is just a straight line.
Which is like, yeah, maybe. And then you end, really, listen to me, you end on the same level as you started. You end on the same point.
Yeah, it's like, and now I'm going to go back to officer school.
Yeah, it could be like the whole bit in the middle could have been taken out, and then you could have said, oh yeah, he broke his legs and couldn't go to officer school. But then he did something really cool. And then they made him go to officer school.
Yeah, to keep him out of trouble, they sent him to officer school. And you're just like, well, yeah, pretty much anything that could have happened along the way. And I think that's why Bathara's death was so disappointing, because nothing happened along the way to earn that death. It was not a sacrifice for anything.
Yeah.
It was a payment. And they even said, oh, it was like suicide, because he could have got out of that. But he, you know, I understand what they're going for there. But it became in a situation full of randomness and no cause.
Yeah.
Finally, the other thing which made me realize why I wasn't enjoying this was because at every point I was thinking, this reminds me way too much of On Basilisk Station.
Oh, really?
By David Webber, which is about someone who comes in and they're already a good pilot and they're already a good captain, and she comes in and she's a captain and she goes through and she does this stuff, and at the end she ends up and there's a war that I don't care about between people I don't care about, and there's spaceships flying around and people taking over this, and there's lots of people talking about stuff, and she describes herself by looking in a mirror, and at the end of it I was just like, if the next book is going to be just like this, there's no way that I'm carrying on. Also, that book actually made me, you know, disgusted with it by its own morality and stuff. And they're published by the same publishers, you know, Shards of Honor, Cordelia's Honor, Honor Harrington, you know, these things. It's all by Bane is the publisher, and they do a lot of these starshipy kind of military science fiction kind of stuff.
It's like Heine is the German publisher.
They do all the same
stuff
as well.
Yeah. German publisher for science fiction, like right now.
Yeah. So anyway, at all the points of this, I was thinking, this reminds me too much of this. However, there is still quite a lot of stuff that I enjoyed about it, even though we've talked so much about how it's a disappointment after the Cordelia's Honor omnibus with Shards of Honor and Barrier. But I still can't give it more than 2.5 stars because, I mean, I really enjoyed this discussion. I really enjoyed reading it at the same time as you, but I can't give this book a high rating.
Yeah.
If you're going to start off the series, this is a minor entry into the series. And yet so many people say, start with this because, oh, this is when it really picks up, because this is where you get to the main character in the series. And I was like, this felt like you say, it ends at the same place it starts. Characters die for no reason. And if you started here, you wouldn't know what was going on. So, that's why before we got to the spoilers, we said, don't start with this book, start with the previous one.
The best thing is to do it like I did. To start with the omnibus Cordelia's Honor, which is like quite chunky. And of course, in German, not available as an e-book again. And so this was why I had to go to paper books. And it's always a pain to carry around a very chunky book.
This is the thing. Look, on our very first date together, Juliana came back to my place. And
you probably told that several
times. No, I might say, but I just, this is really important because if we're talking about e-books and stuff. And she looked around and she said, where's all your books? And I was like, I do e-books, I do audiobooks. And whenever I do paper books, actually back then I read a lot more paper books, but I would always buy them new or secondhand and then just always drop them off at the secondhand bookshop for everyone else to use and benefit from, and then I could get the books. I've told that story kind of thing, that kind of thing. And you were like, oh no, I need the books, I need the proper books. And I was like, and then I went to your house and you had books everywhere, there's just too many bookshelves full of books. And then you moved in with me and you bought all your books with me, and now they're just sitting on a shelf upstairs, just, you know, like just loads and loads of books. And you never even look at them because you don't need to. And now you're annoyed when you can't get something as an ebook. To read on your iPad, and
yeah, because it's so much,
and you listen to audiobooks and ebooks.
Yeah, I mean, I don't do audiobooks so much, but I do like reading ebooks because it's just easy and I can read wherever, whenever.
Yeah, like,
and I can always have loads of books with me without having to have like two chunky books or whatever.
The only problem is getting the books in German, the science fiction books. Because you're like, okay, Hydrogen Sonata, here goes, second attempt. And I the language is complex even for me. You know, Ian Banks, he writes long, florid sentences. It's difficult to get through.
And it's really difficult. And because, I could read through these two books. Three novels in less than a week.
Yeah.
Because it was German. And I can just read. And it's just like, I just... I just relax in reading.
Yeah.
It's no, I mean, if I can, I'm quite good in English, but like if I read English, it is not so much of relaxation in my head.
Mm.
And so I always looking out for the German translations,
yeah,
and then for the ebooks. But
the good thing is we know there's German translations and we know they're in a bookshop around the corner. Yeah. So we'll be able to get them, and I might carry on with, but there's the Mountains of Mourning, which is the next one chronologically. I might get that as an ebook. Or maybe I'll just read the next few as ebooks.
So we have to make sure that the other people know what we're going for next. Which are the books we're going to read?
We're going to go for next. We've done Warrior's Apprentice. We're going chronological order. The next one is a story called, is that a short story? Mountains of Mourning or novella?
Yeah, it's novella.
We're going to go Mountains of Mourning next, and we'll also read, I think there's The Weatherman is there as well.
Yeah.
But no, that's like the first chapter of the Vore game. So yeah, we'll do Mountains of Mourning and the Vore game next, and then we'll catch up probably next month sometime.
Yeah.
Oh no, next month is 2 days ago. Is 2 days away. whenever it is, we're going on a trip in the summer, so I'm sure we'll read some stuff on our summer trip away and things like that. So we'll see how it goes. But yes, we're doing chronological order just because. I just don't understand how people say, oh no, just read it in any order. I'm just like, all of the stuff, all of the emotional response. So yes, 2.5 stars. You have a rating for this?
Yeah, it's difficult. I rated it yesterday and I rated it 3 stars.
Yeah.
But it's really a bit difficult because you just now did a big rant about...
No, but the thing is, like, you've still got the good stuff in your head from Barrier and Cordelia's Honor.
But so I
you're
think still... 3 stars is okay.
Okay, 3 stars. I'm giving it 2.5 stars. That's going to be the final official rating.
Okay.
Or if you want, I could average our two, so I'll give it 2.75 stars if you want. So it's above average. But like I say, so many people read this and go, oh, it's really great. But for me, it was such a big drop down from the previous books. Although I think I only gave Barrier 3 stars and the other one 3.5 or 4 stars. I think I gave Cordelia's Honor 4 stars and things. So anyway. So finally, my final note is Audible. So if you want to listen to this book for free, don't. Listen instead to Falling Free or Shards of Honor first. And you can do this for free if you actually check out the sponsor of the Science Fiction Book Review podcast is Audible. So if you go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP and sign up for any kind of membership there, you get a month for free, and you can listen to any audiobook that you want. And these audiobooks are really, really great. Like I say, and I heard on a podcast, I think it was the SFF audio podcast, that Lewis McMaster Bujold, she says that like 90% of her income from this series now, or from her books, now comes from Audible and audiobooks, because so many people start it and they just keep going and keep going and keep going. Grover Gardner is a really great narrator. These books are really good. And they're all quite short. Well, I say short. They're a good... It's a good length to get into, like 9 hours, 10 hours, 11 hours. That's a really great, you know, kind of length of an audiobook. So I really do recommend it. This series is great. Start off with Shards of Honor. And they have all of the books listed in chronological order, 16 different ebooks to go for. So if you get a gold membership, it'll take you 16 months to get through this book if you just do that. You can actually upgrade, of course, to a platinum membership. That's what I get with two audiobooks. Yeah, Barrier. Yeah,
gave Barrier the same rating as The Warrior's Apprentice.
Yeah, but like for three and a half stars can be a 3-star book, and 2.5 stars can also be 2 stars because it only gives whole stars. So again, if you want to help support me and the Science Fiction Book Review podcast and my own book reading, the sponsorship comes in really, really handy to pay for books that I want to read and buying now books in German for Juliana, for her to take part as well. Juliana's got quite a lot of fans out there, I think. So go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP and sign up for a free trial today. Just don't start with this book. Don't start with The Warrior's Apprentice. Anyway, anything else to say? Oh, that's it?
Oh, no, that's it.
Okay. Yeah. We will do... This will probably be the next book we're going to do together because we can't think of any other... what was the other book that we were going to do? Yeah, my own series. That was it. We were going to do Minding Tomorrow and stuff.
Minding Tomorrow. And some Alistair Reynolds, or maybe some Ian M. Banks or something.
Maybe. I've done enough of that. I've pretty much done every Alistair Reynolds book so far.
That's true.
Unless you want to read the follow-up novel to Revelation Space with me. Redemption Arc
maybe.
And Absolution Gap. I'm not sure you'd like Absolution Gap. It's heavy. Anyway, so that's it from us. You can follow me on Twitter, at Luke Budge. You can become friends of both of us on Goodreads.com. There's some really great discussions going on the Goodreads.com SFBRP listener group, so check that out. There's lots of chatting going on the top five everythings, talking quite a bit about the culture series and recommended reading order for culture books, which isn't publication order, and it isn't chronological order, because you don't want to end with there. You really want to end with Look to Windward. Anyway, I'll talk about that on a future podcast. Otherwise, you can check out my blog, lukebodge.com. You can find that there. And also check out sfbrp.com and check out the episode lists. So instead of recommending I read books that I've already read and reviewed, you can check out everything there. That's it from me. Say goodbye, Juliana.
Goodbye.
And we'll catch you next time.